Welcome to Get to Work Hurley, your podcast for pro writers, fans, and geeks of all sorts. On this episode, Brandon Crilly is a Canadian novelist, games writer, and speaker specializing in weird worlds and doses of sci-fi, characters on the sidelines, and outside-the-box adventures. His debut novel, Catalyst, won the IPP Award for Fantasy in 2023, and Cast Off was just released last month, because we're now in November, aren't we? His more than 50 published short works, is a contributing award-winning writer for freelance games like The Expanse RPG, Shadowrun, and much more. You can follow him on Instagram and sign up for his newsletter at brandoncrilly.com. And now your host, Cameron Hurley. Cameron.
Hello, hello. Thank you for joining us, Brandon. I think as we were talking before we got started, it has been a hot minute, sir. How the heck have you been?
Yeah. Where have I been? In
Canada. How have you been?
Oh, yeah, how have I been?
Well, thank God. You've been in the promised land. You've been in Canada.
So. I've been up in the bladed wintry hellscape that is somehow wonderful. No, I'm good. Busier than I've ever been, but in a good way, mostly.
Now, I was just seeing, how do you know the Expanse guys? Do you know Ty and Daniel?
No, I wish. No, I never had any direct interaction. No, I got in, like I know the folks at Green Ronin doing the TTRPG. Mm-hmm. And so I know that Ty and Daniel have looked at my stuff that I wrote because they double check everything, but we've never had any interaction, which is absolutely wild to me.
That's cool. They're cool. They're cool people. So I'm very curious. Yeah. So tell me a little bit again, you've done all sorts of writing. So you've done 50 short stories. You've done again, the tie-in work, the games work, and now you have leapt into novels. So I think, you know, what for you, I know a lot of listeners also dabble in different, you know, modes and genres. So what are some of the like biggest like craft shifts when you're moving between those things? And what do you love or what draws you to each of those modes?
Yeah. So the reason, like I've always said, or I always said back in the day, back in the before times, that what I always wanted to do as a writer was novels and some sort of games work. And I wasn't sure if it was going to be tabletop or video games or, but something game related. And so it's only been recently that's really been the focus, largely due to just luck, really, and opportunity coming up, which is often the game, right? But the reason why I think I enjoy doing both and I still dabble a bit in short fiction is they are, for me anyway, like incredibly different streams. Like I put on a totally different hat when I'm working on a novel versus when I'm working on a game. And one of the things I love about games is a lot of my freelance work has been supplements, right? So I'm writing an adventure, I'm writing a chapter for The Expanse, I'm doing this stuff. And so it's not, you know, if I'm tired with the novel, it's like I need to let the novel sit for a couple of days, then I can jump over to this games thing and, you know, which has usually a tighter deadline. Put on that hat for a little bit, and it's a good little refresher for the old cognitive process, I say as I point at my brain.
So this your latest book that's out, this is the ending in your duology, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about not only where this, you know, idea came from, but also how you met with the publisher, how that publishing deal also came about. Because this is a smaller indie press, right?
It is, yeah. So it's published with Athos Arts, who are based out of Michigan. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you the short version of where the idea came from, because the origin is wild, which is I had written a short story way, way back in the day for Teg, for the Ed Greenwood group, back when he was doing that, like, which is, I don't know, like 12 years ago or something now. And it was supposed to be for one of the settings in that. And then long story short, the setting never materialized and the whole thing kind of went upside down. And so Ed, in his graciousness, was like, you know, we never published this story, so just take it and file the serial numbers off and do what you want. And so that ended at that story became like the first three chapters of Catalyst and then went on from there. And so I met, so I'd been shopping it around and then I met, or sorry, I was introduced to Athos through another author friend of mine, Greg Wilson, back in, it would have been right around the time you and I met, I think, around Confusion time. And then, you know, got to talking with them and, you know, they loved the book. And so, let's publish this first one. And I was kind of going back and forth on whether to make it a trilogy or a duology.
Mm-hmm.
And fun, and I was looking at all, because most people do a trilogy, right? And that's the, that's sometimes the trap that we fall into. And then as I was looking kind of at what story was there and what I wanted to do with the characters and where I wanted things to develop, I was like, I don't know if there's three books here. Like, I was just gonna like, do I want to drag this puppy out just for the sake of saying that I have a trilogy? And the decision ended up being no. And so what Cast Off really ended up becoming about is, in Catalyst, they, not to, while avoiding spoilers, in Catalyst, you get this point where our main characters have kind of solved the, solve the issue in their world, and but they've made this promise to these giant squid gods that orbit their planet that they're going to then do the next thing. And so the second book is really about, okay, now you've made this kind of big promise that you have to follow through on, what do you do? And then knowing that you're going to eventually solve that, what comes after? Like, when you've solved the thing, you still have the rest of your life to live, and so then what's going to come after that? And so that to me felt very very duology.
And you are a fan of weird worlds.
Yes.
So what was it about building this world that you loved the most?
Oh, that's a good question. What was the thing I loved the most? I think that that's a tough one. I think the thing that I loved the most was, honestly, I think it was in the second book, when I got to kind of go to kind of the far reaches of this world that I'd created and explore spots that I hadn't been able to explore before. Because when you're like, the Cole's notes of the world is that it's this fractured planet that, like, literally was about to break apart. Like, the core of this world was going to explode. A little Titan AE stuff going on, and then it gets like saved by the Aspects, who are these giant squid gods, and so they kind of trap the world in this bubble and keep it from splitting apart. But you've only got like a tiny little bit of the world left that you can live on, and so centuries after this happens, you've got, there's all these different ways that that society learns to survive, right? So it's kind of post-apocalypse. Yeah, I'm gonna say post-post-apocalypse. Why not?
Many posts, yeah. Well,
Only
but that
post.
kind of gets us to Hope Punk, right? Because
Yeah, it does. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
which is
So
a term
like,
that I'm kind of hesitant to use these days, because I know that not everybody digs it as a term,
yeah, huh?
right? Like, people are kind of like, ah, Hope Punk's a stupid term. And I'm like, okay, I understand that. But at the same time, hope is a little subversive these days, I think,
Yes, right?
to be hopeful.
Well, and
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
what do you teach again? Because I know you're a teacher,
So I
right?
teach, I can't, I always get it mixed up in my head how the terms differ between us and you guys.
Oh,
So
yeah.
it's, I teach, we call it grade 10, which is the second year of high school. So that's sophomore for you guys.
Okay.
Sure, something like that. So I teach grade 10 history, and then I teach a senior creative writing course.
Right. So creative writing and history, right? That's what you just
Yes.
said. Yes. So sir, as a historian, right, by training
Yes.
myself,
Yeah.
right, I like to me, Hope Punk is just this recognizing that life goes on. Like these are
Yes.
like
Yeah.
shit,
Everything's a cycle,
horrible
right?
things happen, Brandon. Horrible things, no.
Absolutely terrible things, right? But every generation, I mean, we see this on, all over the place, right? Like, every generation thinks that they're in the worst possible situation. And there's a lot of bad stuff going on right now, but, like, it goes like a cycle. And I do genuinely believe that, if you take the long view of history, our society, and it's like global society, right? Like, leans more progressive, generally speaking. And I think we make a bunch of progress, and then we slide back a little bit, and then we make some more progress. And so I think that it's a net positive when you take the long view, right? But the short view is like terrible, sometimes. Yes, right. But so that's baked into the book a little bit too, because like, when you're in this, you're in this world that, gets a second chance, and you don't want to screw that up in a way. And so part of what I tried to explore with the book is, or with both books, I should say, is that, you've got, like, your gods have literally shown up on your doorstep and been like, we're gonna save as much of you as we can. Now it's up to you to keep going. Like, you kind of, like, that comes with a lot of pressure, and not everyone's gonna agree about how to move forward, right? So it's not like it's a utopia by any stretch of the imagination. It's a theocracy, and that theocracy doesn't work very well sometimes. Yeah, so this is the second book. Yeah, it is. I try to unpack that a little bit more. I forget where we started. I just started rambling.
It's all good. No, again, we went all over the place.
We
That's
did a
the joy
little
of it,
bit.
right? That's the joy of it. So when you were writing this, I think this longer work, did you feel, was there anything you learned from the process of writing a longer piece of work that maybe surprised you?
Oh
Or
yeah.
like, yeah, or it's from the editing process or anything like that? Do you want to?
Yeah. One of the things that really surprised me was how much my voice had changed as an author, which is this such a weird, stupid, nebulous thing to that we I kind of
It's a
hate
thing,
talking about.
though.
It totally is a thing, right? And you don't realize until you're in it. But like, as part, it took me. It was funny. I had 2 years to write this second book, from when I signed my contract to when I needed to get it to my publisher. And again, I can admit this now that I really wrote it in like 6 months because, as
Yep,
many of us do, and so, like
same, same.
that's standard. But part of it was because I went over like I t when I'm writing my long form stuff, I tend to do that thing where you write the first third and then go over it again, and so I do that kind of by nature. But I was doing that a lot with this book, and part of it was that there'd been enough of a gap between Catalyst and Cast Off that my voice had changed as an author. And I had started collaborating with a couple of friends of mine on co-written novels too, and so that was changing my voice. And so what I had so then so I'm writing Cast Off and I'm like, it doesn't sound, and I got too much in my head about like, if it doesn't sound like the first book, right? And then finally I just had to accept it. It's like, no, it's gonna say it's a different sort of book, it's gonna be a different tone, it's gonna, and if either readers are going to like it or they're going to not, and I got to write it the way that I want to write it, and see what happens. So that I think that was the biggest lesson of it, was kind of realizing that A, my voice had changed, and B, that was okay.
Well, and again, we change, right, as humans. And I think that it's art especially is this snapshot in time of who we are. And that's every Bob Ross, the painter, saying, where it's like, oh, this is a snapshot of this one. I love that, right? Because it is true. And especially when you have a long process, like you talked about,
Yeah, that's
where you're
it.
starting and it's a 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, you're a different person at the end while you're finishing the last third and,
Yeah,
in
that's it.
6 months than you were at the
Yeah,
beginning,
totally right. Can I, so have you had that? I realize that, can I ask you questions? Because we haven't
Yeah,
talked in a
sure,
long time.
yeah.
Like,
Oh, yeah.
have you had that? Like, because
Oh my
you've
gosh.
got a shitload of books. Like,
Yeah, well, and especially this last one's a good example because of course, things have been crazy in the world, but I sold a book in 2018 that was a one line.
Okay.
Killing Eve meets Die Hard in Space. I literally wrote it. I literally sold it on that. It's the my most
Amazing.
woo, anyway, for the most money I'd ever made.
Even better.
And then but it was due September 2020.
Oh,
Well,
no.
shit, you know. So,
Yeah.
and it was, I write very similar in that it takes me a long time to get that first about 40,000, 50,000 words. And I could do the last bit in sometimes, again, 6, 8 weeks because you have that momentum, you understand the world. But what I found throughout that is because I was taking such a long time and because I changed so dramatically, right? That
Yeah, sure.
2020 fucked us all up.
Oh,
And I had a
yeah.
lot of personal stuff in there too. My husband had a cardiac event. My dad died. My dog died. I mean, it was the whole thing, right? But you
Jesus.
become this, I know, but you become this different person. And it
Yeah.
was really hard. I found myself starting over, right? I really
Yes.
found that the book I was writing 3 years before was not the book I was writing the last year and a half. And I
Yeah,
really,
yes.
the characters are the same, right? But what I was interested in was very
Yes.
different.
Yeah, it's that interest, right? Like, because you got to follow what you're into, because otherwise it just becomes a slog. Yeah, so I totally dig that. Yeah.
Yeah, which was definitely what I was feeling. And that is that, that's a good professional writer thing to think about too, is like, when do you say the slog, because we have deadlines, right? And we want to hit the deadlines. We want to get paid. At the same time, it's like, oh my gosh, this is, creatively killing me and it's not what I'm interested in anymore. So
Yes.
yeah, that's just such a tough balance.
100%, and it was wild. Like, it wanted, because I didn't time it very well. Well, I didn't. I didn't. Like, when I was in that last month when I was finishing off the draft of Cast Off for my editor, I was doing Expanse stuff at the same time, and so I was going back and like, and it was a like I was doing a big thing for the Expanse, and so I'm going back and forth, and I was like, why did I do this to myself in the same month? Like, why did I know why I said yes, but.
Yes. Well, and that gets into another good one, which again, I'm always asked this question, and so I have to ask you guys this question, but it's, how do you find the time, right? How do you balance the fact you have a day job, I have a day job, we do all these different creative things. So how do you find that balance or not balance, between doing all that work, and how do you kind of structure or not structure that creative schedule?
It's it not as I'll be honest, not as well as I used to. And if I'm being
Because
totally
we're old,
honest,
sir, we're
well,
old.
and that's what I keep realizing, right? Like, what I did, I realized this last year, or no, it's still 2025, earlier this year, still in the same calendar year. And what I realized was that, like, I would go to work. And teaching it, like, is, not to toot my own horn or anything, but if you're doing it right, it's a demanding job, right? Like it's a creative job, and so it kind of takes from the same well if you're not too careful. And so I'm going to, I'm doing my teaching thing, and then I come home and relax for a little bit. Then my wife and I make dinner, and then I would get to my computer, not every night because because then I would burn myself out. But on the nights when I'm writing, I get to my computer like 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I try to put in an hour or two at least, on whatever it is that I'm working on. And so is that that's kind of that's been my process for a long time. And then Sunday morning is writing time, and I do a solid, like, kind of 4 hour block. But what I realized again earlier this year that I was doing is when I sat during the week, when I sat down for that evening writing time, it was in my head, I was like, okay, now my day has started. Because the writing or editing or doing conference work or like all the stuff that ties into me as a writer, that's the stuff I really want to be doing. And so it's like, okay, now I'm where I want to be, which is doing my thing. And then I would get rolling, and then I'd forget, oh no, you worked a full day. Like, you spent all this energy on to, so no wonder you're a little tired and the words are a little slow. And I started to get really pissy about it because like I got really mad. It's like, why can't I do more with my week? And it's like, because you're spending 40 hours a week teaching. And I read at the same time this will.i.am had did this interview for somebody, I forget who, and he was talking about that whole thing. I don't know if you've heard of this thing where he says you have your 9 to 5 and then you have your
Yes,
5 to 9 and
yeah.
that horse shit. And I'm like, I get it, and I get where he's coming from, but I'm like, I also need to take care of, the physical form, right? Like, I need to, so I had to kind of take a bit of a pause and be like, okay, how much can I reasonably get done in a week? And kind of remember to be kind to myself a bit. So that's really a big part of my structure is, obviously meeting my deadlines, but also like not taking on too much so that it's unsustainable, because then I'm no good to anybody.
Well, and I feel like, and that does lead to a lot of the productivity hacking that people talk about, right? And I think some of this I see, and it tends to be younger people who haven't had their first burnout, right?
Oh
They haven't
yeah.
had their first
Once you've had
burnout.
your first.
I've been there, right? Like, I've been there. Oh no, I've got this. It's going to be great. I just need just the next book and the next book and the next book, and you hit a wall.
Oh
And
yeah.
it's something I talk about. My day job is in marketing, and I work with my designer a lot. And I say, get up and do something else. Like,
Yes.
you don't just sit and stare and do production, 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 because
No,
here's what
it's a
happens is that you start to go like this, and you don't see the things that
Yes.
are, instead, you only see things right in front of you, and it takes away all that other creative energy that you could be putting into your work. So the problem with, this intense focus I see all the time on productivity is, oh, I gotta be working 5 to 9. Well, in the meantime, you're not taking a walk. You're not going, with the dog. You don't have your family. We don't have all these other ideas that come to us when we're not actively working on a problem.
Yeah, you
You're
got to
not
let yourself
sleeping
relax.
enough, so you're not processing enough. I've been reading a lot about like how much sleep is important, right, for creative thinking, because that's when our brain actually goes through and starts to catalog and make connections between things. It's not when we're staring at it, doing
No,
it.
God,
We're
no.
not turning cranks, right? It's that time. It's that time when we're not doing it, when we're walking the dog. That's really the,
Yeah, that's
that's where
exactly
the
it. So
magic
I,
happens.
yeah, like I had that very I had that very recently. So we just did CanCon, which I think I've told you about before, but this, so that it's our Ottawa-based industry con for writers and editors and whatnot. And so we just had that a couple of weeks ago. And it's, I spend all year off and on, volunteering for it and organizing it. And then so we do the con, and it's go, go, go for like 4 days. And then I take the Monday off afterwards. And then so I'm going about it, and I'm trying very hard to have a nice casual day, and I'm bad at that. But like, so it get to the end of the night, my wife comes back from, we teach at the same school, so she comes back from work, And we make dinner and whatnot, and I'm just poking at something, and all of a sudden it was like my whole body just collapsed. And this is like 8 o'clock at night, and I went downstairs to my wife and I was like, "I'm going to bed." And she's like, "Are you okay?" And all I said was, "I'm going to bed."
Oh,
I went and I laid down, and by the time and I'm out, right? So this is like 8:30 at night. I go to sleep, and I slept solid until like we get up at 6:30-ish to get ready for work, and that following day I felt amazing after like whatever 10 hours of sleep or whatever. Like I was like, "Oh my God, do I need 10 hours of sleep a night? Because if that's the case, this is bad news, man." Like.
no, it does. It makes a huge difference. I do, and I'm one of those people. I need 9 hours. If I have less than 9 hours, I'm just not. I don't. Which I hate, right? You hear about people like Martha Stewart who are like, 5 hours is perfectly fine. I'm like,
Yeah, what the
I've
hell,
tried.
man?
I've tried. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah,
It's just not going to
exactly. Yeah.
happen. So,
Yeah, you
yeah.
hear these stories about like was it Peter the Great is one from history, right? Where he was like just full of energy, and all these reports of like him, he'd sleep for 3 hours and then he'd go and work on this puzzle and he'd be, like doing all this super intelligent stuff. And I'm like, well, that's great for Peter the freaking Great. Like I can't, apparently I'm not him. Right. But one of the other
Yeah.
things that I came up with recently to kind of help get me through the or to kind of rethink my not my hustle, but the more grind aspect of writing, is that 'cause it goes to what you're saying about like you can't just be focused on the screen all the time. Is like I kind of like each day of my week, I think of as is this going to be a big day or is it going to be a little day? And for me, a big day is, I'm going to spend, a huge chunk of time working on one of the whatever long form project it is, or is that one of those days where I'm going to do, I've got to, polish up this thing for whatever games publisher, and then I've got to send these emails, and I got to, track down this invoice, and I got to do this, and there's, the six or seven things, and I'm going to do all of that in a day. And then the little day is, I'm just going to, I'll send off that one email, or I'll poke at that one paragraph and call it, because you do too many of those big days in a row, and that's where I think you risk the burnout. But I actually like I mark it down in my planner. It's like this is going to be a big day, and then I give myself time afterwards to relax. And so that has helped for me at least to try to make sure that I'm not trying to do too much every day, too many days in a row. Because again, apparently I'm not getting any younger. I can remember when I was young.
Entropy is real.
Entropy is real. I hate it.
It's a shock all the time. Wait, that affects me. Shit.
Yeah, I'm not immune to it.
So what, again, this last book just it came out last month, right?
Yeah, it was
Or
October
yeah,
14th.
October. So what, and I it always sucks when you're like, oh yeah, I just this book come out, but of course the next thing people ask is, so what are you working on now, Brandon? But I am curious, like, what's on your plate right now?
So actually, a lot of cool stuff is on my plate. So I mentioned I was doing some co-writing. So my co-writer, Faye Gabriel, who's based out of Baltimore, we just signed with an agent at Dollar Mass in September. Yeah,
Oh,
so
fabulous.
we're repped by Dylan Haston, who's over at DMLA, and they're phenomenal, very very cool. And so we're doing. So Dylan had some thoughts on our first book, which is what we had queried him, which is a multiverse romance called Your World or Mine.
Oh, yeah.
Which we co-wrote, which we
Oh,
absolutely,
I mean.
right? Which we
Yeah.
absolutely adore. And so we're doing just a little bit of finessing on that, and that's the big November project. And then once we have that done, hopefully it'll be out on sub. I don't who knows when, because publishing and whatnot is weird, but. So that'll hopefully be the next big thing. And then after that, what am I doing? And then it's games stuff after that. I'm in this position where I've written a bunch of game stuff and it hasn't come out yet. And so I'm waiting, when is this coming
I've done all this
out?
work. Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah. Who knows what's coming out after that? And then honestly, I have kind of a, I, it, I'm in this weird situation where other than, like once Faye and I finish off our revisions, we have to decide what we're working on next, and then I have to, and then I've got this kind of these 2 or 3 months coming up, which is weird, where like I don't have any deadlines. I have that sort of weird thing, and so it's like, am I gonna? What do I want to work on now? Am I gonna? Do I reach out to all of my, my games publishers and be like, what do you need? Or do I just, pick something that I haven't had a chance to poke at and poke at that, right? So that's my November, or the end of November, is figuring that out.
Yeah, that is always tricky when it's like, oh, and everyone's like, well, is he even doing this stuff, and what's even going on? Because I feel that so hard, because I finished the draft of my last book last year this time, and it
Okay.
doesn't come out until spring, or no, January of 2027. So I'm like,
Really?
did
Oh my
Karen Hurley
God.
stop writing? And I'm like, I
That's
finished it a year ago. I promise.
long.
Isn't that
Even by
crazy?
our standards, that's
I
long.
know. Well, what happened was, when I again when I was late, they pull you out of the
Oh, that's right. So they shuffle
right?
you
So
between that
he had to
and
get me back in. So,
that's
you're
right.
just kind of up shit creek. But
Also, a really long book. It took them a really long time.
yeah, really long time to read it or whatever. Like,
400,000
I wish
words.
that was the case, Tim. I wish it was the case. Yeah, Tim, what questions do you have for Brandon?
Mine are trivial and non-specific to writing. Since you are in Canada, I have to ask you, what are your favorite Tragically Hip songs?
Oh, yeah, I've always had a fondness for New Orleans is Sinkin'
Okay.
and 100th Meridian. I like that. I think those are my top two, which is like the most basic fucking answer.
Sure. Well, I'm partial to 100th Meridian because I'm originally from Buffalo,
Oh,
and it
okay,
mentions
so that,
Buffalo in that song.
yes,
So,
absolutely.
excellent. Those are excellent choices.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have a favorite Canadian author that is particularly like something you maybe grew up with or something like that?
How do I pick one? Okay, so somebody I grew up with, so not because like there's a whole ton of us up here. Like I could pick one
Sure.
of my friends, but if it, do you want somebody like now or somebody that I grew up reading?
Grew up reading, so that maybe somebody that we wouldn't know, like a lesser American like myself, who does not know the Canadian canon.
Uncultured,
I'm
uncultured. Oh, I see.
uncultured. Our
Yes.
uncultured American audience. No, so one that I grew up with, and again, I know he was. I had the sense that he was well known at the time when I was in university, but I don't know how well known he is now. It is Stephen Erickson, who wrote the Mala Sen Book of the Fallen, and so it's probably better known Canadian, I would think. But for anyone who's not familiar with him, yeah, he was one of the these doorstopper epic fantasy books, which was. I think the original series had 10 books in it, if I'm not mistaken. And so I grew up reading him, and he was the only like of all the epic fantasy authors that I was reading at the time. So like, late high school, early university, he was the only Canadian one. And his like the world that him it was him and Ian Easelmont, like it was their world that they created together when they were playing GURPS or something, and then wrote these books. And so like I mean, it was a weird friggin' world. So that's probably where I got my kind of genesis of, make your world as weird as you possibly can, because there's so much going on in that world. So it's, yeah. So if anyone has not gone back and checked out Stephen Erickson's stuff, I don't know what he has out lately. I kind of lost track, but the Mala Sen books are phenomenal.
Okay. That's it. We can go into the pop culture questions if you'd like, Cameron.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right,
Sure.
so what's everybody listening to? What's everybody enjoying, watching? It could be podcasts, TV shows, movies, books, albums. What's currently got your fancy out there? Brandon, I'll start with you as the guest.
All right, so in terms of books, I literally last night I just finished The Incandescent by Emily Tesh. Have either of you read this?
No, but she was the one, she won the Hugo, right? The other
Yeah,
year. And
for Some Desperate Glory. Yeah. So The Incandescent, I think it is her most recent one. It is so good. It's and I think it's particularly good for me because it's set in the UK. It's set at a magical school. But it's not your kind of typical magical school story because the main character is the director of magic, which she's like an associate dean or something, and so the whole so the it's steeped in what it means to be like a teacher in 2025, but in her case, she teaches at a school where they're teaching like demon summoning and demon protection wards and whatnot. But it's not secret. Like it's the world of this book. Everybody knows that magic exists, and everyone kind of looks askance. Oh, you're going to the one where they teach how to do wards and stuff. Okay, fine, you go do that. And there's this wonderful scene, like in the second chapter, where Safi is the main character, and she started her day. It's like Monday morning, and it's a boarding school as well, so she lives on site. And so she goes, and makes her coffee, and she's going through, and it is a perfect encapsulation of what it means to be a teacher. because she goes from just like, you know, talking to this person about this issue and this person about this bullshit, and it's like every, and then somebody comes up to her and is like, Safi, the photocopier is on the fritz again. And she, okay, fine, I'll go deal with that. And but the reason the photocopier is on the fritz is because the tiny little imp that has been possessing it for the past 4 months has gone on strike. Because someone, so, because it overheard somebody talking about unions, and it was like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. And so it's like demanding blood now, or it won't work. But it makes, but it's this perfect, like, cute little setup, because when you're dealing with a photocopier at a school, it's like an arcane art. Like, why are you so mad? Honestly, it's been a long time since I read a book where I sat back and was like, fuck, I wish I wrote this. Like, and but that was, but The Incandescent did that for me. It is such a good book.
Okay, who was the author?
Emily Tesh.
Emily Tesh. Cameron, what about you? What's been in your wheelhouse?
Well, I finally managed to get myself through Department Q. Everyone kept saying, "Oh, it's so good, it's so good." I love myself a toxic masculinity hero, but this guy was like such a jerk. The first like episode was so hard to get through. He's just awful. Eventually he grows on me, but it's actually extremely well written. The actual mystery in Department Q and the other characters at least were absolutely stunning. I thought it was is again, I watch a ton of murder shows, and I thought it was extremely well done. And I started reading the book as well, which they made a lot of good changes in the show. The book is like a bro fest. It's like all dudes all the time. But the show did a good job with that. And then we watched Mad God, which was this like
That.
stop motion. It was this crazy stop motion gore fest until like this assassin comes down into the heart of the world and there's they eat things eating other things. It reminded me of Stars Are Legion, my book where there's
Oh,
like living
yeah.
world ships. And he's like,
Yes.
the idea is I guess he's descending into some hellish sort of whatever, but it's very
Interesting.
gooey. And I loved it. My husband had seen it, he's like, oh yeah, you gotta watch this. I was like, oh my
Yeah,
God, it was like going to my book. It was so cool.
yeah,
And actually, just last night, because we've been watching a bunch of schlock because it's the season. And I've been watching a lot of bad stuff, but we actually watched Pontypool last night.
Oh,
Yes, but I
Pontypool.
figured you would
Set in
know.
Ontario.
Yes. And I actually thought very clever setup, right?
I
It's
do too.
a
I think it's an
viral.
underrated film, personally.
Yeah.
It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination,
No,
but
it's not perfect. Yeah, they had a lot of choices at the end.
yeah.
But this sort of viral, like language-based virus, and it was all done. This was clever, is that it was all done, right? Mostly it's War of the Worlds. It was all done with just, I mean, yeah, you get some people running in, but mostly it's all done with dialogue. And it's like it was a great example of like the old Twilight Zones and all that. When you have a good writer, you don't
Yes.
need a huge budget. You
God,
don't
no,
need it.
no.
It was three people in the cast in one set, and it was very, very good.
And especially people like people who can carry certain characters, like when it's just audio. Like, I still think of, there's this character who you never see in that film. This Ken Lonnie, who's
Oh,
the
yeah.
chopper
Ken
guy, and
from
he's not
the
even
in the
a
sky,
chopper.
yeah, who's not in the helicopter. Yeah,
The
yeah.
actor playing, he does a phenomenal job of like, as his, like, what's going on with him devolves, and all you get is his voice. It's so good.
Yeah.
Good
Oh, that
old
was a good
Pontypool. Good
one.
pick.
Classic. That was from
Yeah,
2009. So yeah, we
it's
had
an old one now. Yeah.
Nice. Let's wrap up right here, right now, by saying you can find Brandon at brandoncurlygott.com, and that's where all the socials are connected and that sort of thing. If you want to go to the Instagram or the Blue Sky, I know you're on there, and Instagram, or I mean LinkedIn, I guess,
That one still exists.
that one still exists. And if you are listening to this, you can watch this video and it get a ton of exclusives over at patreon.com, Cameron Hurley. Hurley's Heroes get short, gooey adventures every month from Cameron. In fact, one just went out like yesterday as we were within the 24 hours of recording this. So, Cameron, with that, send us home.
All right, Brandon, thank you again so much. It was lovely to speak with you. Wonderful to have you on. And for everybody else, get back to work.
Damn right.
Damn Skippy.